Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. To Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Whether or not we realize it, the vast majority of us define ourselves by the expectations established by our society, our culture, family, and community. We internalize constructs based on external stereotypes of gender, age, race, social standing, or a myriad of other categorizations. And as a result, we often embrace lives that do not reflect our deepest desires. The insight that I just read for you comes not from a psychologist or self-help guru, but from today's guest, celebrated medium Paul Selig. In his book, The Book of Truth, The Mastery Trilogy, Book 2, Selig, a former New York University faculty member and Goddard College trustee, whose extraordinary abilities have been featured on Nightline and other places, offers readers the enlightened and panoramic perspective of his spiritual guides who share with him their otherworldly wisdom. Paul's unique abilities have been featured on Fox News, the Biography Channel series, The Unexplained, TV's Beyond Belief, and the documentary film, Paul and the Word. He's appeared on numerous radio shows and podcasts. And he works as a clairaudient, clairvoyant, channel, and empath, and offers workshops internationally. So let me bring him on, because I know you're all excited to hear what Paul has to say. This is going to be a very interesting show. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Thanks for having me here.
Well, welcome. Welcome. I'm very excited to have you. So, so Paul, you're a clairaudient, clairvoyant, channel, and empath. How long have you had these, or known that you had these gifts, and how recently have you started using them?
Well, I began to open up psychically when I was in my mid-20s, so I wasn't somebody who conceived of himself as a psychic, and I still struggle with the term, but when I was in my mid-20s, I started to open up a little bit clairvoyantly, and I started seeing these little lights around people, and I had an experience of feeling energy, which was clairsentience, although I didn't know what that was, and then I studied the form of healing, and I found that when I had my hands on people, I could access information from them clairaudiently, so I began to hear for other people. And as the information that I was hearing was getting confirmed regularly, I began to open up more. And I was opening up essentially the channel that allowed for that. And what became apparent was I was able to receive a kind of dictation from these guides that I work with. So the books that are coming out now, and there's, I think, 5 in print and a 6th on the way, didn't begin to come through until 2009. They've been delivering them at a very rapid pace. But up until then, I was a college teacher, and I was doing a little group in my apartment that met for many years, and I wasn't seeking to be known or recognized for this work.
Very interesting. It's amazing how this gift can just pop up at any time, anywhere. I'm sure it caught you off guard. So you have several gifts, and what is the one that when you channel your guides, mm-hmm. are you using the clairaudience, clairvoyance,
yeah.
and empathic skills you have?
Yeah, I am. I mean, channeling is really taking dictation, and that's a form of clairaudience. I'm hearing the words and repeating what I'm being told in rapid succession. So that's clairaudience is clear hearing. My body is used when I work, so I'm a physical medium of sorts. There are things that happen in a series of gestures and mudras and phenomena that seem to come when I do this work that have been experienced by people. And the clairvoyance comes in really as a backup. It's not my primary ability. I use it when I read for clients. I access information visually when I'm working with my guides or dictating a book or running a workshop. I may be shown something as part of the dictation and then asked to describe what I'm seeing. So all of the pieces come into play. They're really just different ways of receiving information and then rendering it for others' benefit. That's really all these things are, as I use them at least.
Now, most channels do not really know what they're saying as they're channeling, and someone else takes dictation. Was that the case with you, or is that the case with you?
No. I mean, yes and no. I mean, there are trance channels, and those are people that are really out for the sitting Edgar Cayce, who was, you know, the channel who, I think he coined the word, actually, channeling. You know, in the 1920s, was asleep for his dictation, and he would come out, and they would show him what he said. It was written down for him. I am a spoken channel. I'm not a written channel. I close my eyes. My consciousness recedes, and I hear, and then I repeat what I hear, often at a very, very rapid pace. So everything that I do is recorded and then transcribed. So the books that have come out are not written books. They're the transcriptions of all of these sittings, and they come through usually, you know, this is the next chapter, here we would like to say, and then they go and they deliver a good half an hour or 40 minutes of text verbally, and then they'll take a pause and they'll come back later in the day or the next day and do more. And that's how these things work. Through prescribed sittings, I'm always in front of a group of people. The new book that's being delivered now, they're calling it the Book of Freedom. They're about halfway through, and in nine days of sittings, they've delivered, you know, 150 pages in front of groups of students, because I've been doing workshops and the guides are using the workshops as the opportunity to deliver the text, which I find very interesting. So I'm there, I'm present, but I'm receded, and I don't retain the information in the same way that somebody who's just actively listening would. There was somebody on the telephone for the first 5 books who was just present, because I can't do this into a void. There has to be somebody listening on the other end. Now
okay.
There just happen to be many people. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Do you remember when you first got in touch with your guides and what the message was, the first message?
I remember the first message of import, and I think I was in my early 30s, and I'm pretty sure this was it, or this is what's coming to mind now. This phrase, freedom will come when the throne relinquishes its king, which I found to be maddening, but I understand it now. I think that was the first thing. At least I wrote it down. I suppose it's possible I read it somewhere, but I think it was like, what the hell is this? But, you know, I wasn't looking to channel, and my channeling, as I do it, has always been in service to other people, so it's not necessarily a private occurrence. Or at least it didn't start off that way. It started off in groups.
Okay. Okay. So were you, you know, when you first began to hear your guides, did you know what you were hearing, or did you have to, you know, ask them, who is this, what is this, you know, why am I chosen?
It was a different process. This wasn't like, you know, the angel Gabriel appeared above me and said, we are here, and, you know, it wasn't like that. It was a very odd thing. I was working and volunteering at a center with people who were dying. I was working with, you know, at a place that was providing alternative services for people with AIDS during the height of the AIDS epidemic in New York. And so if I had my hand on somebody's chest and I heard the name Jimmy, I would finally just say, do you know somebody named Jimmy? And they'd say, yes, that's my lover who just died, you know, or that's my father. And as I continued to hear for them and they kept confirming, I began to trust what I was hearing. When I first started sitting in groups, I was there to do the energy work. I wasn't interested in information. I wasn't looking to channel. And I just began to hear more stuff. And I was surprised by it and a little confounded by it. And I would say, listen, I think I'm hearing this. I think I'm hearing that. I think it used to drive people nuts because the energy was coming. But it took a while for me to just sort of surrender into this transmission. I'm a radio. That's really what I am. And all I'm really doing is turning the dial to another station that's not the dial that most of us live on. We all know what it's like to hear our own thoughts, you know, and we know it when it's us. The difference when I turn the channel is I'm hearing information that can be proven out that I couldn't have access to by normal means. And it comes with an energy that's palpable, you know, that people can feel, which I'm excited by. I like that we get to share in that experience.
That is really exciting. So can you say that that first thing that you heard about the throne again and explain to us what you've learned it meant?
Well, if it's what I was, you know, I mean, it's funny because I haven't thought of this in a while, but it was freedom will come when the throne relinquishes its king. And I believe what that means is that the small self or the personality structure, you know, is basically who is sitting in the throne of our lives, and that we think that that's who we are and that is who's ruling. What my guides say is a small kingdom. The small self rules a small kingdom, and that is the kingdom of inherited information and cultural expectation and who we should be to get our way in the world. The small self rules a small kingdom. The true self or the divine self is who needs to take the throne or take claim purview, jurisdiction over the world she expresses through. And that's my understanding of it now, whether or not, and I'm assuming that was what I heard and I didn't just pick it up somewhere, but God knows it's in alignment with the message that they've been bringing through in all of these books. You know, all of their books are really about the true self realizing itself as who we are at the cost of the old, at the cost of who we think we are, what we think we should be.
So if we all have this small self, and obviously this has been going on for eons of time, what was the purpose of having the small self then, and why is it important for us to let that small self go and embrace the bigger self?
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Well, this is normally where I would step out and let the guides start talking because this is their stuff. It's really not mine.
Okay.
I mean, remember, like on the radio. I mean,
okay.
I've heard that, you know, we agree to this. We chose it in our belief in our separation from our source, you know, that with this belief that, you know, God is in the clouds and we're in the mud has really sort of played itself out in this way, in this sort of illusion of separation. On a higher level, we're not separate. And could not be. I mean, there's a little line in the 12-step literature that says, you know, God is everything or God is nothing. What's our choice to be? And that's a radical claim if you really think about it. You know, I mean, I remember when I heard that thing, it blew my mind, but it's kind of got to be true. So either it's everything or it's nothing. You know, it can't just be a God or an idea of a divine power that's convenient when it's doing what we think it should. So the realization of the true self comes at the cost of, you know, the smaller identity that has thought itself to be everything. And I mean, that's the only way that I can say it. Why did we agree to this? To remember. I here to remember who we are. And that's the process that we're in right now. I also get the sense from the guides that, you know, and they've said this as much in their books, whatever I think of them or you may think of them, but they say, you know, humanity is at a time of reckoning, and a reckoning is a facing of oneself and all of one's creations and everything that we've created in fear, which is a whole lot of stuff, needs to be recreated in a higher way. And that's really so that we can go forward. I mean, the guides say, you know, the idea that we've created bombs in order to protect ourselves is insane. Bombs are meant to go off. They're not meant to keep peace.
Well, it's pretty heavy stuff. So are they basically saying that we are in a transition, or that we need to let go of the small self? Or are they saying that we need to learn to gradually let go of the small self? I mean, is this supposed to be like an automatic mm-hmm. thing where we're supposed to read it and go, all right, I'm yours,
well, you know,
I'm who I am.
I get it. Yeah, the books, the guides say, are energetic transmissions that work with their readers. So people read the books and they have all these... there are all these reports of people saying, I'm reading the book and my body is vibrating. And the guides are really sponsoring people, according to them, in aligning to the higher energy that will support the transformation. But no, I think the awareness that we are of the divine, or that there is an aspect of us that is often a momentary awareness and a shocking one. And I've heard of a lot of people who've had large experiences with that. That moment and that reckoning. But I do suspect that the realization of it is a process, because, I mean, it's kind of, if you really go where these guides are going, and I'm not saying that I've been able to go there fully, you know, it's the equivalent of living in a different universe, really. I mean, it's nothing is as we were taught. You know, we're infinitely more. You know, we're not what our parents told us we were. We're not what the government says we are. We're not what the doctor says we are. We're something far more. And the realization of that, the knowing of that, because the guides say realization and knowing are the same thing, is profound. And it really does come at the cost of a release of what we have thought. That's my understanding of it. And my experience of it in some ways, in the ways that I've been able to do this work. But do I think it happens all at once? I think we'd probably go nuts if it did. I think it would be too much light at one time. You can go blind, but you can get used to the light getting brighter and brighter and brighter as you walk towards it.
That's true. Good analogy. Yeah, I really do see the process unfolding in the last few years. Actually, well, I've been doing this show for 6 years. So I would say, mm-hmm. you know, I really have seen it in the last 6 years for myself, of this process unfolding by so many people now who are light workers and light receivers, that years ago people were very closed off to that. So I would imagine that the spirit world is working on all of us to get us to come to this time of reckoning. Would you agree?
Yes. I mean, I would agree. Or the part of ourselves that knows what we need is doing it. I don't know if it can be pinned on any one thing, but it does seem like we're in transition, yes.
Yes. Now, I know for myself that if I didn't stay grounded, that I would probably be all in the cosmos all the time. Not that I'm psychic or anything like that, but that's a much more comfortable place for me to exist than is the very solid, heavy physical world, you know, because that's a hard place to be. But we do have to really exist in this physical world. So are the guides, do you think I'm just asking you because I know you ask the questions, but do you think the guides are saying that we're supposed to get rid of this heaviness and exist in this world, or are we supposed to really move towards existing not in this world?
Well, I think what you're back to is sort of God is in the clouds and we're in the mud, and the mud is heavy and, you know, God is light.
Right.
And what the guides would say, I think, is God is the mud. And until you realize that God is the mud, it's going to be heavy. So what they're speaking about is as how we align ourselves in a higher way supports us in claiming the world into co-resonance with us. So that schism, that separation, is no longer there. The guides that I work with, they talk about the kingdom, and they say that the kingdom is the awareness of the divine in all things. And that is your, they say it's really another octave, it's an, or you can say dimension, I suppose. It's another way of being, but we're still here. You see, we're here, but we're operating in a higher way, and therefore, through our resonance, supporting the world and lifting in a higher way as well. To put it simply, God sees God in everything it sees, because God isn't separate from anything. So when you release your own this conviction of separation, what becomes available to you perhaps then is very different, and your experience of being here is different. But I don't think it's about floating away and escaping on a unicorn and a rainbow. I really don't. And I think that, you know, spirituality has been used that way, and I don't think it's very effective.
No, it's not effective, because we do have to exist in this physical world, and that was, you know, that's my point. We have, you know, schooling here to do, and we can't be both, you know, we can't just take off into the cosmos. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of clarify that up, do you have names for the guides? Have they given you names, or are they a team of one name?
It's a team of one name that I mean, it's a collective. I mean, the name that they use is Melchizedek, and it's an old name, and they finally announced that in their fourth book, although it's the name that I've known of for a long time, and I'm not that attached to names. But that's a lineage, and it's a priesthood, and they're teachers, and they're here to support humanity. That's my understanding. You know, I suppose if they call themselves Fred the Cab Driver, I wouldn't have minded that either, as long as as the information was helpful and truthful and accurate. But that is, and that's the identifier that they have used. Yes.
Okay. Do they explain where they are, which dimension they're in, which?
They say the Christ
astral zone they're in, whatever.
No, it's, I don't know. I don't get. They say they're the Christ consciousness. I think that that's above the astral. I don't think that's the level of. They're not. These aren't like your dead relatives, and that's sort of
right.
The lower astral and all of that. This is a different level of teaching. But no, they don't really get into that. I'm hoping that they do in one of their books because it's interesting. And I've been a little resistant to going there with them, and perhaps that's why they haven't, you know, transmitted all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I ask because I've talked to channels who who their team is actually from the Pleiades. And, you know, and my question was, well, if they're just energy, how could they be from one place, you know. So it's real food for thought, because you can go round and round with this thing.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with attachment and narrative. And so I suppose, and I don't my guides don't talk about the Pleiadians, you know, and I don't disavow that at all. I mean, I'm not close-minded to any of it. But I think that there can be a comfort for people to say, I'm channeling the Archangel Michael. And then suddenly you have the narrative that comes with Michael and the importance of that, or, you know, an extraterrestrial, which carries its own stuff. I think it really is dependent on the information that's coming through and the intent of the message. There's not just one book in the universe to read, and I think the fact that information is coming from multiple sources that is hopefully helpful can only be positive, because there are people that are going to never read my books. because they're channeled books, but they may read somebody else who's getting comparable information in some other fashion, and that's as it should be, you know?
Right, exactly, exactly. I get it. So the guides talk a lot. They say that we are living in fear, that I guess the small self is a fearful self. And where do they see the state of our planet? Where are they? What do they see our planet as being currently, and the hopefulness of where it's going?
Where do they see our planet being, and the hopefulness of where it's going? They're saying,
so
you know, where
words,
we have choices.
In terms of fear,
yeah.
Let me clarify that. In terms of fear, we are a planet of fear. We are people of fear. And our planet is being ruled by fear. So is there hope for our planet? I should have said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've got to stop choosing in fear. It's really simple. The guides say, look at your own lives. Look at every choice you make because you're in fear and see what it gets you. And you'll see you're getting more fear from it. And we're being invited to choose in fear every day. We're being invited to be frightened of the people on the other side of the border, frightened to be, you know, frightened of this one or that one. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. So the action of fear is to claim more fear. And if you want to move beyond it, stop agreeing to it. The guides say everything that you agree to, you're shaking hands with. What you shake hands with, you hold, which means you're in co-resonance with. If you want to stop shaking hands with fear, you're not going to claim it anymore. Then you can claim something above it. The guides say at the level of the true self, fear doesn't even exist. It's just not even real. It's a lower vibration. If you start operating at the higher vibration, you stop being in collusion or agreement to fear in order to direct you and tell you who you are or should be.
Do the guides tell us how to go about doing that? I mean, other than
that's
just
the
saying,
books, yeah.
move out of
that's
your fear.
That's all the books.
Okay.
That
so,
is all
so
of the
what
books.
Do they
that's the
tell
whole
us?
Transition.
So what do they tell us? I'm sure they tell us, obviously, lots and lots of things, or you wouldn't have all these books. But can you summarize some of the things that we can do quickly and easily?
Well, I mean, you know, the quickly and easily, I'm going to be honest with you, then it gets into self-help stuff. And this isn't self-help. This is re-identification. Do you understand there's a difference? The small self likes to fix the small self, but it's never really worked. You know, the small self really can't fix the small self. So what you can begin to do, I suspect, is start to claim an agreement to who you really are beyond what you've been taught. I mean, there are very simple things that you can do to raise your vibration, which is really what this teaching is. Because in the higher vibration, you're not agreeing to and operating from the old. But it's not a quick fix. It may be a quick revelation, but then putting it into practice or having an experience of it may take some more time. But, you know, we don't want that in our culture. We'd rather take a pill and be happy than do the work.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just who we are, and it's unfortunate. So very simply, one of the things they say is, you know, you can't be the light and hold another in darkness.
Hmm.
You know, it's hypocrisy. So, you know, and they say what you put into darkness calls you right there to it with them. So there's one exercise that they do in one of the books where they invite you to go into a cave, and in that cave is the one person you never want to see again as long as you live. And then your job is to escort that person out of the cave to the light. And they say, well, you're the one that put that person in there to begin with. And, you know, they have kept you there with them as a result. So you're not leading the person out in the life just to free them. You're liberating yourself as well. And that's a basic teaching of forgiveness, which is a challenge. Because, you know, we live in a culture that thinks we should be bombing people. I mean, what kind of, you know, you don't kill what you know to be holy is what the guides say. You just don't do it. You know, it doesn't make sense. So the realization that if you are an aspect of God in form, just that much, means that everybody else has to be too. That's mind-blowing, and that will change your life. It really will. You know, I mean, one of the things the guides do is they, you know, they ask us to claim the divinity in what we see. There's a claim that they use, and it's an energetic attunement, and it's a very simple one, and this can help people. And they say, I know who I am in truth. I know what I am in truth. I know how I serve in truth. And at the level of the divine self, that's always true. The divine self, as you, always knows who she is. She's not confused about her identity. She always knows what she is. She's not questioning the form she's taken or the world that she's expressing through. And she knows how she serves, which is how she's most fully realized in her life and in her world. The small self can't claim this because it's not always going to be true. But the guides call this a claim of truth, and they say when it's true, it's always true. So if you work with that, that'll actually support you in your field, your energetic field, in aligning to that claim. It'll actually work with you.
Okay. So when you speak about all of us being aspects of God in form, I've heard it said other ways. I've heard it said that that the source of everything, which we call God, has separated into all these different souls, so that we originated as part of the source. Is that the same kind of philosophy that your guides are telling you?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all of the same stuff. Imagine one sort of immense mirror that has shattered into a million and millions of pieces. It's all of the same mirror, and it's all reflecting the light, and the properties are there. Perhaps what it's reflecting is different depending on where it's landed and what it's here. But the guides say we're here to learn. This is school. The soul progresses, you know, through these lifetimes. This is what I understand, but the realization of a true self or the divine self, or you can call it the indwelling Christ or the, you know, the eternal self. There are names for this in most esoteric traditions, I think, illumines the soul and transmits this light for the benefit of everyone and everything. But yeah, we're all of the same stuff. That's how I hear it.
Okay. And that really blows religion right out of the water.
It doesn't blow religion out of the water. It blows the idea of having to be right out of the water and the idea of separation and hypocrisy. But I think at the core of most religions, there is that seed that the divine is implicit in everything.
Okay.
It's what we've done with religion that screwed it up, which has become very fear-based.
True, exactly. Exactly. So I believe that we all channel pretty much all the time, but that we're not aware of it. And I, and with that belief, I actually challenged myself to do it. I challenged myself to do automatic writing and other things. And I found that the information comes through. I'm not necessarily hearing it, but I'm thinking it, and it's often things I wouldn't normally know. And I use it in my counseling practice very often with my clients. I always ask Spirit to give me the right information. So do you believe that most of us have this ability and just don't recognize it?
Well, I use the word channeling in a very specific way. Channeling for me is taking dictation. It's not about inspiration in the way that we know of inspiration. So having an inspired thought, you know, or making inspired art, or having any of those things, I think is amazing and is of God. Channeling is sort of, to my mind, specific because it's about rendering accurately the information that's coming through without editorializing or embellishing. So I make the distinction between inspiration and channeling. And I think we all have access to higher information, whether it come in channel form, which has more of a discipline attached to it, or inspiration, which is really about allowing still and being a conduit still in a higher way, you know, is it's present and is available. Yes, I think we all do have capacity, absolutely.
And for some of us, I guess, such as yourself, it is It just comes about easier. Others, you know, and maybe you were chosen to be this conduit of information, and so that's why it's coming easier to you. But I do believe we all have access to that information. Other than what we've talked about, are there any messages that that are meant for us today or in general?
I mean, from the guides themselves? I you know, I don't know because I haven't tuned into them today. And, I mean,
okay.
You know, let me see if there's anything. I should say that if I do channel anything, I whisper the words as they come and repeat them so people hear things twice. It's a little jarring. And if I don't preface that, people think there's something wrong with the radio or the guest, which is probably more than likely. Let me just say we would like to say one thing. They're saying we would like to say one thing. Trust who you are. Trust who you are. Trust everybody to be here. Trust that you have a right to be here just as you are, just as you are. This teaching is about making you truthful. This teaching is about making you truthful, not making you right, not making you right or correcting what is wrong or correcting what is wrong, to realize who you are, to realize the truth of who you are, to realize the divine self, to realize the divine self is a gift, is a gift. It's not punitive. It is not punitive. It is what comes when you know. It is what comes when you know that the what that you are, that the what that you are, the being that you are, the being that you are is connected to something greater, is connected to something much greater and seeks to express that greatness, and seeks to express that greatness as in through yourself, as in through yourself, and yes, your world, and yes, your world. We each have potential. You each have potential to be realized in the highest way you can hold, in the highest way you can hold. How you hold it, how you hold it, in many ways is your journey here. In many ways is your journey here. You will be escorted up the staircase. You will be escorted up the staircase to the higher octaves, to the higher octaves, as you are willing to be led, as you are willing to be led, not as you think you should go, not as you think you should go, the small self thinks. The small self thinks, the true self knows. The true self knows, and if you listen to her, and if you listen to her, you will have a joyful journey. You will have a joyful journey, period. And they're saying, period.
Okay. Thank you, Spirit. I appreciate that. Thank you. We all do. We all appreciate that. Okay. So today we are talking to Paul Selig, and his latest book, well, he's in the middle of another one, but he has a channeled text trilogy, and it's called The Book of Truth. And the one I'm holding in my hand is book two, but I'm sure there are many. He's also the author of I Am the Word. So, Paul, how do we get in touch with you or, you know, and find out how to get your books and those kind of things?
Well, my website is my name, Paul, PaulSelig.com, PaulSelig.com, and there's information there about workshops, and I do live streams on Wednesday nights where the guides are taking questions and lecturing, and there are links to the books as well. You can get the books at any bookstore, Barnes & Noble or Amazon, online or IndieBound, I think, you know, probably all carry them. As well, so they're not hard to find, and that's my information.
Okay. So, do you enjoy what you do?
I'm coming to it. I have an uneasy relationship to it. You know,
and what is that about?
I was a college teacher for 25 years. You know, I had a life that I enjoyed. I had work that I understood and counted on, and I appreciated, and I loved every minute of teaching. I was a very good college teacher, and I ran a graduate program as well at another school. So, you know, that was how I knew myself in the world, and now I have this other way of being known in the world, and I'm traveling all over the place, and it's a little more isolating, strangely, than what I'm used to. And not that channeling isolates one, but the nature of the work. I mean, I literally show up in front of an audience, you know, almost every week, and without any idea what I'm going to say and what's going to come out of my mouth, and I close my eyes and kaboom, all this stuff happens. And, you know, it's fascinating at one level, but it's a strange experience. I mean, it's kind of... it's a little bit like being a ventriloquist puppet. I don't mean to diminish my own role here, but my job when I channel is taking dictation, and I I can't. I'm not the writer of these books, so I don't take the same kind of satisfaction from the production of them than I would perhaps if I had written them myself. It's a very odd thing. My name is on the cover, but I'm not the author. I'm a collaborator. The words came out of my mouth, but there was no writing involved at all. You know, I care more about the little introduction that I wrote to the second book where I told my story, where I was writing and when weighing whether this was a good sentence or not and had a sense of pride turning it in, than now, which is, here's the transcript, this is the book, you know. Somebody
right.
else is even typing this stuff now. I'm not even typing it anymore. They're just taking the recordings. I look at it and I go, well, I guess that's what they said yesterday. I hope it all makes sense, because the rule with these books is that they can't be edited, you know, the unedited transcripts of these sessions.
That's
so
incredible.
I don't even get to do that. Yeah.
So at any point, could you turn this off if you wanted? Not that you want
yeah.
to, but could you?
Yeah. I mean, could I turn it off for the day? Yes. Is this now my work? I suppose it is. And right now, because there's so much video of me channeling all over YouTube and Vimeo, I doubt I'll get another academic job as long as I live. I mean, you know, I chose to leave that career. Nobody asked me to, you know, I was enjoying it, but, you know, this had taken over so much of my life that it seemed inevitable that I take, you know, put both foot in the pond and not just the one foot that I was holding there. So, yeah, I hope it continues, and I hope my relationship with it continues to transform, to hold it. It's an odd profession. I mean, it's kind of like somebody who touches their tongue to their nose, you know. I mean, they don't know how they do it, but they do it, and that's kind of how I'm like. I don't know how I do it. I just show up.
Okay. All right. Good answer. Yeah. I imagine that would be a bit strange. I can definitely thank you for explaining it that way, because it really helps us to understand what you go through. And I can imagine that it's not that satisfying to be creating books that are not even yours. So, but you know, this has been so interesting, Paul. Thank you for being my guest today. And we all know where we can get the books and where we can reach you. And you do workshops. Do you do private readings too?
I do. Yep. It's all up on the website. And private readings aren't available till January, I think, but the workshops are ongoing, and they're all over the place, and they're quite interesting.
Okay. Well, thanks again, and I really appreciate you being my guest today and talking to us about what the spirits are sharing with you. It's very fascinating. So I hope it continues for you, and I hope that lots of people read these books and get the messages that are meant for us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. RANDIGFINE.com. Tomorrow I will have on with us Laura Lee, who I have the last Wednesday of every month. She is a spiritual medium, and she will be doing live readings online. The number to call for that is 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. The queue fills up very quickly, so I don't know if you'll be able to get in, but you can start calling 15 minutes prior to the hour. You know, only 15 minutes, not 20 minutes, but 15 minutes before the hour you can try to get in. And that's about it for today. I wish you serenity and joy always in your life. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com, or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.